Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on. Figure. We've done that f***ing! Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
I'll take him, Bowson. I mean that. Take him.
I'm Richard Keys.
Oh, sorry, I'm Andy Gray.
And I am Nigel the
Hey!
AKA DJ.
How was the meeting at the Dutch Embassy?
Yes, I was perfect. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have to go through these meetings and especially keep the contact flowing and keep the contact going. So,
I mean, how many meetings have you been to at the British Embassy?
In the 8 years I've been here?
Yeah.
None.
No, I was just
You've never been invited.
Hold on.
To the Scottish Embassy?
We don't have a Scottish Embassy. British Embassy. We should have a Scottish Embassy.
How many times have I been to the British Embassy?
British Embassy.
I've been here 8 years as well.
No. You've never been invited as well?
No.
Wow.
I think Keyes has been invited, but he didn't want to go.
I had the choice of either going to the embassy or finishing 2 out-of-date yogurts that I'd found in the fridge.
Right.
So I took the latter. Yeah. Wherever you are in the world, whatever time zone you are in, a very warm welcome. Very pleased you could join us. New listeners, I say this every week, and it's the case that they are, so I do. New listeners are joining us all the time. It's fantastic that you found us, especially all of you that follow DJ. Handle is at
Nigel de Jong.
Nigel de Jong.
And I on Instagram or NDJ official at Twitter.
Correct. There's a whole host of programs that you can enjoy looking back through the archive, some of which we're going to not so much enjoy, but mark.
Yes.
Because this has been it's been a difficult week for many, and we'll get around to that in just a
Absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely.
You can get in touch with us at Keys and Gray Pod, and that's something else we need to update as well.
Is it?
Hmm. Well, Keys and Gray.
And DJ.
DJ.
Not completed yet.
Classic cars.
What about them?
I've found Bangers and Cash.
Yeah.
And what a good program that is. Mathewson's of Yorkshire that sell classic cars. and I love it. And Jay Leno's Garage.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I'm addicted. There can't be anybody in the world that's got a better collection of cars than Jay Leno outside of the big collectors.
Right.
Yeah.
The Royals.
Yeah.
Various different
cars. Yes.
But he was showing off Simon Templar's car. You don't know.
You don't know Simon Templar.
Yeah, I'll speak to you, Andy. Simon Templar's car, the Volvo.
Yes.
It's even got the number plate with it still.
Is it really?
I didn't realize that actually Roger Moore owned that car when the series was shot. It was his car. It's now in Jay Leno's garage and it looks magnificent. But I was reminding myself of both the fun and the frustration of owning a classic car. I had a 1988.
You did.
Rolls Royce.
Blue?
Sky blue.
I remember it was bought
by a friend of mine, Jeff Mann, an architect, Coventry nutcase, who walked into a garage in Bodmin, I believe, the year we won the cup, and said, I'll buy anything you've got that's sky blue. And they went, well, we've got that over there. It's a Rolls Royce. I'll have that.
Yeah.
And he enjoyed it for a long time, and then I did. But they frustrate you because they go wrong, and unless you're a mechanic, you're constantly sending them off to somebody to repair.
Yeah, or very rich.
So, and the other thing I learned this week was that generation of car,
yeah,
that's now vintage.
Young what's, men, what's vintage then?
Cosworths.
Really?
And
they're more expensive nowadays.
Escort RS.
Yeah. Well, RS 2000.
Yes, they
had one of them.
These are the cars.
I was at Villa first time. An RS 2000.
Imagine you keep holding on that.
What was that? Yeah, oh, that was a great car, by the way.
These are now vintage cars.
Vintage cars.
Oh, that was quick.
That was rapid, huh?
Oh, RS 2000. I loved it. Yeah, loved it.
But it wasn't your daftest car, was it?
Hold on a minute.
Your daftest car was that thing that was made of fiberglass.
Oh, the Panther Lima.
Yeah.
That was
Panther Lima.
Panther Lima. Yeah. I was bought on a whim now, as a lot of us do. We buy things on whims. Bought on a whim. Yeah. I was filling up at a garage and somebody drove in with one. And I thought, I like the look of that. So I went and bought one.
Drove one before you bought
no,
it?
No, never.
Wow.
Never.
No, so, and the minute you bought it, because I've seen pictures of you with it,
it's lovely.
I can see written all over your face is regret.
You're thinking
to yourself, what have I done?
Lovely,
it was like the car they met us in when we came here 8 years ago. Do you remember? We were quartered quite nicely. We had seven series each, and it was all...
Each? You
know,
each.
When we first came to have a look around, seven series each, the minute we'd signed... Some old shagger turned up at the airport, remember?
With a Jeep. And a wing mirror hanging off, flapping out in the wind.
The roof flapping.
I said, Dick Easy, I guess we've signed the contracts now, have we?
You guys are asking, where's the 7 Series?
We never saw that again.
Never saw that again. Ever again. Ever again.
Have you had such a thing? A toy?
Toys, of course. I mean, what Andy just mentioned as well. You know, when you're a footballer, you know, you love to get some nice things as well. And for me, classic cars, it's always been on my mind. I had a Plymouth Barracuda.
Oh, wow.
1970. Plymouth Barracuda.
Yeah, Plymouth Barracuda.
That's a sort of an American Chrysler.
It's American hot rod.
A hot rod.
A Hemi. Yeah, so I had that one as well. But
This was
my time in Germany. So this was about in 2006, 2007. So about 14 years ago, and I sold it as well because what you said for various reasons of like
engine problems. Oh, I gave mine away because every time I took it out, it was fine. I could leave it sitting for 6 months, starter up, beautiful. Yeah, right. I mean, it was like driving a very carefully sprung mattress. You had, if you were going to break, you needed to think about it at least 1,000 yards before you were going to.
Yeah.
I mean, this 2-ton thing, it's beautiful though. But it just, I couldn't start it when I'd taken her out. Mm. You know, the engine got warm and that was it. No, you're looking at his car.
Looking at the internet.
I'm looking for a Plymouth Barracuda.
Yeah, you have to do the 1970, I think it's in the 1970s.
What's the hilarious car you've had?
The most hilarious car?
Mm.
I gotta go back to my first car though. It's a Toyota Starlet, a small car, and that I got from my mother.
Oh, and that's not Larry.
I was just going to say, what do you mean by Larry?
I mean, show off.
Expensive.
I thought it was hilarious.
Show off car.
Show
biggest
off car.
Look at me car.
Ferrari 599 GTO.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like those. I've never bought
Ferrari.
One of those on that basis.
No.
I don't really like those, Andy.
That was the most flashiest car. I think I drove them all. I drove the Aston Martins, the Bentleys, the Porsches, and the Ferraris and the Lamborghinis.
Bentley, so, you had?
I had, the first Larry car I had,
stop
the one
tapping your fingers.
The one I really liked was the Aston Martin DB9.
Oh yeah,
top, which was an amazing car.
But he got some good advice on that. See, when he bought it, they said to him, "If you don't put a lot of miles on this,
never losing it,
it'll keep its value, and you'll never lose money on it."
Right.
How much did you lose on it?
About 30 grand. I only had it 18 months.
You never drove it.
Did 3,500 miles. Went right. I'm going to sell this now. Big fortune.
Cheers for the
tip.
Then
I went to the Bentley Continental. Went to the Bentley Continental.
Okay.
And the missus had a 911 Carrera.
Right.
So they were all Larry in those days. But right now,
just imagine. You kept holding.
Oh, just imagine
cars.
If you kept all of our
911.
Cars. Oh. I had a beautiful Capri Ghia.
Yeah, well.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I would have kept them all. Just imagine I hadn't got sacked. I could have kept them all.
Yeah. You're not wrong there.
To use the current terminology, I think you'd have recycled them by now, don't you?
Yeah. I had always wanted, if I'm being honest, ever since a kid, and I don't know when I could buy one, why I didn't. But I always wanted an E-Type.
Yes.
A Roadster.
Agreed.
Soft top.
Yeah.
Always wanted one, Nigel.
Yes.
And I don't know why.
Is that something because of you being British?
It's generational.
It's generational.
And I'll tell you something E-type else
for me as well, huh?
That we're going to get around to talking about. Right. George Best had one.
Okay.
And when I saw George in his E-Type, I thought, I want one of those. But at Mathewson's this week, a red Series 2 came up and they couldn't get 40 grand for it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
The Cosworths and the RS2000s were going before the Eta. Because I'm afraid, Andrew, people like you and I and classic cars, we've left the scene.
I'm having an E-Type any time before a Cosworth.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
Yes.
Oh, me too.
Regardless of my age.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. I love the E-Type. It's just the beauty of it. It's just the form, the design.
Enzo Ferrari said it is the most beautiful car that was ever designed.
Yeah. What was your favourite car then of all those you had? What was the one, if I could give you one car right now that you've had over the years, what would it be?
If I could ever had one, yeah, that I didn't own.
One you've owned. Yes, one you've owned. What would you think? I would keep that one forever.
Oh, that's a difficult one. Let me think about that one. I must say the Aston Martin DBS. I had an Aston Martin DBS from 2009, 2010. That one was unbelievable. Nice. Just the design. It was the first model that came out from the DBS at that time. And if I could keep that, that was...
If I could,
if I could
guarantee reliability and that it was going to start wherever I wanted it to and when I wanted it to, I would sit in that Rolls Royce and just smell it. it had that beautiful, deep, that leather smell.
But is there one car?
I would sit in the road, or the car that you recommended to me, that Brabus that I got.
Oh, yeah.
That Mercedes.
Mercedes.
Oh, did you ever have a favorite car that you wish to own?
Yeah.
You said the E-Type. If you ever had the money for it.
I would say, E-Type. Yeah, E-type but the one I always aspired to was the Capri. And when I got one of those, I thought I was just that. That's it.
Mine was 3-litre GT. Yep.
No, mine was 2-litre gear.
Oh, I had the 3-litre. And the trouble
you see, that's
trouble with
it?
The Capri. It's like a big long bonnet.
Where you holiday? 11 Reef?
A big long bonnet. No. Did you not find them, though? You couldn't keep control of the back end of it.
Oh, no, the back end went absolutely.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
I'm shocking.
The front of it was miles long, wasn't it? And every time you went around a corner a little too fast, the back end of the Capri would flip out.
Yeah. Oh, I had one. I had the Mercedes 300 SL Gullwing. You remember with the flag?
Yes.
Oh, I saw Perez in one of those in London recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Beautiful car.
Nice.
That was just also beautiful.
Do you know the thing about the Gullwing that always, when you park it, how do you get out?
Yeah, you get out. Of course. But you have to park in a space that nobody's inside.
Exactly.
Of you.
Well,
you wouldn't get in a multi-story, but
it's dark,
that way.
Isn't it? You can't get out if you're parked in a space.
That car is so beautiful, so rare, and so expensive. It needs its own parking lot.
By the way, if I see one, the first thing I do is park tight next to it.
Yeah, no,
do you really?
That is you. That is you.
Yes. I do. Yes.
That's a bad plan. Yeah, that's a bad plan. It's a bad plan.
£2 million car. Yeah. Just goes straight next to it.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. 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 I'll be insured.
And you see the driver climbing in through the passenger door.
But it's a beautiful car.
Good.
We need to get serious.
Yes.
Well, I know. This was a very interesting start to the show today.
Yeah, well, it's different.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people, Andy, going, yeah, me too. And I'd like that. Yeah. Do you know, but just before we finish it, we should have got an E-Type, a regenerated E-Type.
Yes,
like a kit car.
No.
You can buy the E-Type with the bodywork, but then they put a modern engine in it, power steering, all the mod cons.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like a new car, modern, but you've got the shell of the E-Type.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the first car you ever bought? Quick.
A Hyundai Avant for my mother.
Kizzy?
First car I ever bought was a 1962 Hillman Minx soft top. For 50 quid, column gear change, bench seat, magnificent.
Morris Marina. Oh, no. I bought, yes.
No.
First ever. No. Morris
the worst
Marina.
Car that BMC.
Morris Marina. Oh, by the way, TC.
Twin oh, TC. Oh. Flying machine.
Oh, no. Oh. Morris Marina. That was my first ever. Unbelievable.
I wouldn't have one of those if you gave me one, honestly.
That was all right, I think.
No, it wasn't. It was not acceptable ever to drive a Morris.
There's a radio inside of it.
Oh, red seats.
But did you have cassette?
Red seats.
You had a cassette player as well.
No, I didn't have a cassette player. Not until I got
you
my.
Those cassette players?
Until I got my
what did you
Ford
have,
Escort.
Normal cassette or the 8-track?
No, I had a normal cassette. And the funny thing is, it didn't have a forward button. So I had to reverse the cassette to go backwards in order to hear the song again. Did you remember that?
Yes, of course. But with the 8-track, which was just, I mean, sorry, Betamax and VHS, 8-track and cassette, 8-track was hopeless.
But the size of them?
Hopeless.
You need it. You put four of them in your car, your boot was full.
Well, especially that Lima thing. Now we need to try and get serious again. Our guest today is going to explain to you how good a player George Best was.
Right.
Okay. Mm. We had this conversation in the studio. I said Best was best, the best, and Messi before Messi,
definitely.
And playing today as a 10 on pitches that are like bowling greens.
Oh, good.
Oh,
you'd be
nice. And Nigel went, nah, I don't know, really. We had a little exchange about Sir Bobby Charlton and Cruyff, and Nigel's of the opinion, Sir Bobby who? But in an era,
he says, like, I have zero respect for Sir Bobby Charlton.
In an era so, where there was no internet, no mobile phones, no fax machines, you could go anywhere in the world and you said, I'm an Englishman. And they would go, ha ha,
Bobby Charlton. Bobby Charlton.
That's how wide and influential he was. Mm. So we'll talk to Ron Atkinson shortly about that. Before that, Andy, I need you to say some nice words about Walter Smith.
Well, where do you start? Where do you start? Well, what I've read, what I've listened to, pretty much from the day it was announced that Walter had passed away, sums up everything you need to know about Walter Smith. I met Walter when I was 17. I'd signed for Dundee United and Walter was a player there. He'd have been about 25 then. And obviously got to know him over that 2 years that I was there. And it was evident, even back then, he was going to be a coach. You know, Jim McLean was his mentor. Jim took him under his wing almost and helped him with his coaching. Because Walter, and he would, if he was here, he'd tell you, was an average player. Right? He was never going to hit the heights of being a great footballer. But you just knew, guys, that there was a coach in there screaming to get out. And it was no surprise to anyone who knew Walter that he did go on and achieve the success he did. Everybody always says it. When people pass away, oh, a wonderful guy. This truly was a wonderful guy. Mm. Time for everybody. You and I knew him very well, Richard. You met him on numerous occasions as well, with a wicked sense of humour.
Well, that's the thing about Walter that I think those who don't know him intimately perhaps wouldn't understand. He intimidated me.
Did he?
He intimidated me. In which sense? In the sense, I've always been scared of authority, teachers and policemen and that. So Walter is a manager, managers in general. Until a day at Ibrox, football commentators love to get ahead of themselves and everybody else by speaking to managers. And in those days, it was one or two commentators. Yes. These days, it must be a dozen. Yeah. So Martin Tyler, Andy, myself, were at Ibrox. Motherwell. For a football match. So Martin, of course, has got his commentary sheet and he's got about nine of the names on there that he thinks are going to start for Rangers. So I'm in the tunnel, and Andy's in the tunnel. Great. And Walter, you know, sort of looking around to make sure there's nobody listening because they're so secretive about that stuff as well. It's unbelievable how touchy they get about it. So he said, Walter, he said, can you give me the team? I don't want to get ahead of the rest. Give me the team. Well, said I, Martin, I. And he started reeling names off, none of which were on Martin's crib sheet. And he went through 11 names and went, all right. And he went back in the dressing room and Martin's face now, the blood's drained from it. And he comes to Andy and he went, he's changed 11 names.
There's 11 changes in this kid. What do we do? I've not done any homework on any of these players.
I just gave him every name that wasn't playing.
And then I realised this is a guy that does have a sense of humour hidden behind that rough granite.
Yeah.
Scottish
exterior. He's a wonderful guy. Be sorely missed, Richard. And you only have to look at the quality of people coming out to say things about Walter, who he worked with, even my old club Everton, the respect he has from there. A player, a manager of Rangers, the second most successful manager ever after Bill Struth, 21 trophies I think he won at Ibrox, a director, a chairman. Just, and even now, as Stephen Gerrard has said, many times Stephen, chatted to him about this, that and the other and always had time for him. You won't find one person, even across the divide, that would have a bad thing to say about Walter Smith.
But what is it? You know, what you said, I've seen various messages and also condolences, you know, on social media. What is it about him that made him so good as a manager? Take away this person, of course, but was he a manager, or was he more of a tactical
genius? I'll tell you what, it was nice for me, both. He was both. He was tactically very good. I always knew that, even when I was a kid there. He would talk about the game in depth, even when he was a player.
Right.
And I always knew that. that he was good. But because he was influenced by Jim McLean, he was always very tactically astute. He knew the game inside out. And I think it was the combination of being that. And he, you know, if you talk to every player that was in his group, even the ones he left out the team at times, you know, that was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they couldn't argue with Walter. Mm-hmm. So he handled them really well. And handled all the players that he ever worked with really well. Right. And I think that was a key. So he was neither just, he wasn't a great tactician and didn't know how to handle players. And he wasn't a great handler of players and wasn't a great tactician. He was a combination of both, if I'm being honest with you. I think with that rare ability to not only be good about the game tactically, but also be able to man manage as well.
Would you rank him in the top of the British football era? When it comes down to the Fergies, the Arsene Wengers?
I thought about that the other day, Nigel, and I said, how can a man who won six Premier League titles in a row? I think six. He won the last six of the nine in a row. Graham, I think, won the first three
Premiership titles.
Premiership in Scotland. How can a man who did that, who took Rangers almost to the final of the Champions League, who took them to the final of a European competition.
By the way, can I just add, in the interest of accuracy, would have been in that final had Marseille not bought.
Had they not been cheated out of it, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the final he took us to in Manchester, that we went so close to achieving there. And then he puts 21 trophies on top of that. How can Walter not be one of the greatest Scottish managers ever? Mm. I mean, ever.
No, I think Nigel...
Ever.
Greatest ever.
I mean, greatest. No, the greatest in British football.
I think the answer to that is I don't think he had. Unfortunately, he was at Everton at a very difficult time.
Very bad time. Mm-hmm.
So you know what his success, what he produced at that period of time for Everton was way beyond what the expectation was of that club then. Mm-hmm. But he didn't establish a reputation south, I think, in the way that he had done so.
No,
north.
He didn't. He didn't.
And that's sad because he was a giant.
Absolutely. I mean, as far as Rangers are concerned, as I've said, there's only Bill Struth has won more than him, but Bill won it in a day probably where it was easier probably to win it. He had Celtic, that was it. Walter probably won it in a time where there were more competition around. And I think that, you know, you're right, Keyes, as coaches go, he would have liked to have achieved more in England. There's absolutely no doubt about that. When you've spoke to him since then, he would always like to have done half as well in England as he did in Scotland.
One of the great gifts he gave Manchester United in a short period of time as assistant was Cristiano Ronaldo. Darren Fletcher's told us the story, Andy. It's been available all week on Twitter of how he stopped calling fouls in practice matches to irritate Ronaldo into being a player rather. There's an episode available. We spoke to Walter, Andy and I about 6 months, 8 months ago. Had a wonderful conversation with him. So there is an episode also available that you can find in the archive. And if you're a football fan, not just a Rangers man, I would advise go back and listen to that because it's thoroughly entertaining.
I mean, even when he was leaving Everton and he's talking to the chairman after he'd said, you know, you've got to go. And he's sitting there saying, right, who are we going to get to manage this club? He's actually sitting there helping him. Mm. And he actually said to Moisey, I think Moisey came in after him.
Yes, I believe he did,
He actually said to Moisey, you're lucky. Moisey went, what? He said, he's a year too young for me, but there's a kid who's going to be the best, Wayne Rooney. And he's just too young for me to pick, but next year you will have him.
Wow.
And he was absolutely right.
Wow. This says something about play acknowledgement.
R.I.P. Walter. And absolutely. Thank you on behalf of many.
Yes.
We should speak to our guest.
Yep.
A man who I've known for a very long time the days when I was a cub reporter in Manchester, working for what was then Piccadilly Radio.
Did you have a good reputation with him?
Of course.
A relationship with him, I mean?
Of course. And I'm going to try to reenact. See.
Where were you working? I'm very interested in that.
Piccadilly
story.
Radio it was. It's Piccadilly now Key 103. Radio. I don't know why they ever changed
it. In
the
Manchester?
Name. Yeah, in Manchester, yeah. Oh, yeah, in Manchester, Nigel.
That's what I said,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, very, very close to both clubs. Billy McNeil was manager at City, with Jimmy Frizzell as the assistant. Jim Tolmie and people like that, Andy, were being signed. Derek Parlane. Centre forward for City in those days.
Rangers?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But over the road, United were always just a whisker away from the success that they wanted. And this guy was just a perfect Manchester United manager.
Or wasn't he just?
He was just, you know.
Wasn't he just?
Oh, And the image we all have of him, the bling and the champagne, not true.
No, football man.
He'd rather have a cup of tea.
Football man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You worked with him for a year at
Villa. Yeah, I was his assistant at Villa.
He signed you at West Brom.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Coming out with for a year. Okay. Anytime, Paul. Yeah, he was a different class.
And he's here to talk to us about an era of football that our young friend here doesn't quite understand.
It's going to be interesting.
Let's go.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Big Ron Atkinson, Ron, yes. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Richard. Nice 10 days in the sunshine in Tenerife, so everything's good.
Have you taken the dogs for a walk this morning?
Yes, they've been out. We've walked them around the park. Excellent.
Right. Now, Ron, the reason that we asked you to join us this week, twofold. One, obviously, Manchester United, everybody's talking about. But I had a conversation in the studio recently with my young friend here who didn't understand how good a player George Best was.
Well, I have to correct you. I understood how good he was.
I said to you.
I just have a preference for another player for my country.
I said to you, I'm just saying he was Messi before Messi. Yes. And I'm going to get Ron's thoughts on that in a moment. But what I'd like to do first, Ron, is restage an era when managers answered their own phone. Okay? So I want to go back to a period of time when, as a young radio reporter, and Big Ron looked after me, brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay? So let's go back to a period of time where we're at the cliff. Ron, you're in your office. Yeah. Okay? Follow this. Let's see if we can get this right in one take. Okay. Here we go. Here's the phone. No, it's not.
Hold on.
So, Ron, this is where you come in and you pick your phone up.
Yeah. Go on. Hello.
That's it. That's the one. That's brilliant. And I would say, Ron Atkinson, please.
Speaking. Who wants him?
Richard Keys. And you would say, you got him.
You got him, Keezy. Kettle's on.
Isn't that extraordinary, though, that managers would answer their own phone?
Well, I mean, it's like sometimes when if I rang another manager, I remember ringing one certain manager's name I won't mention.
No, go on.
Come on.
No, because he gets upset. I said, will you ring me back? And when he didn't ring me back, I rang him and said, you know what? Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger and all that, they ring back straight away. Why shouldn't you when you've done nothing in the game?
Straightforward.
I love it. And you know what Cluffy said?
It was a different time, fairness, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I actually think, I mean, everybody through different eras will say their time was the best. We had a great time. Yeah. Our time was great. The people involved in the game were great. You were friends virtually with everybody except for two. And
Except one or two. Oh, right. Okay. Any names on that?
I can only think of one of them at the moment.
Go on.
Well, it was Neil, wasn't it? Neil Warnock. Because Andy was there.
Oh, God. Oh, come on. I have to tell the story, Casey. I'm just going to jump in here now. Big man, you'll remember this. I'm Ron's assistant, Nigel, at Villa. Ron had taken me into Aston Villa. Brilliant. Give me an opportunity to be his assistant. We're playing Notts County at Villa Park.
Yeah.
And the dugouts were open air. Mm-hmm. There's no roof on them at that time for some reason. So you could look across and see the next right next to you. Mm-hmm. So Neil was quite a vocal coach and he would be going, top him, kick him, kill him, all these sort of things. And Ron stood there with his rolled up notes, you know, stood there with his hand. The big man kept looking over and going, what's the matter with this man? And he walks over to him. Is he another thing? He's told to top Tony Daly. He was running past him. Ron walks over to his side of the dugout. Neil Warnock stood there, picks up his notes, and he just goes whack right across the back of the head. He says, Neil, enough of that, please. Then, very coolly, goes to step back into our dugout, puts his foot straight in the water bucket. I start to laugh and he says, if you see anything, you're fucking sacked. I went, okay, big man.
But what more important, what was Neil Warnock's response to the little slap?
Well, he got slapped from the top man at the time, so he just accepted it.
Respect.
You know that yourself. When someone's being a bit naughty, if you just leave a little calling card, they calm down, don't they?
But doesn't that say something about the game and the era that these guys were in?
Oh, brilliant.
Ron was in, and you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do these things nowadays.
No. It was special. Ron, so first part of the two reasons. What is wrong with Manchester United, in your view?
I think they've got to look at the recruitment. They've got to look at the recruitment and the way it's been recruited. I mean, I think that's something that's sadly lacking in the game today. I mean, I would highlight people like, I think Liverpool recruit brilliantly. I also think Leicester City recruit brilliantly because they identify a weakness and solve that weakness. Whereas I think Manchester United for the last two or three years, I mean, a prime example, and Nigel will bear me out on this or explain something, is the Dutch boy they bought from Ajax, Danny de Beek.
Danny van de Beek, yeah.
Well, he might be a terrific player. He might be the best midfield player in Europe, but who knows? He's come over. Mm-hmm. He's never been given an opportunity to play in the team, and he must sit there thinking, well, why am I here? And there's been a number of that, like the winger, Sancho. They buy him for a lot of money. 80 million or whatever, and he comes over and he's just warming the bench up. And you think, well, surely, and then I look at Liverpool's recruitment and they go, we need a left back. Going back a couple of years, we'll take the lad Robertson from Hull, you know, and then they'll go, we need a central midfield player. And they'll go, no, take one there. And then they don't buy in job lots. They go and buy, and they, same as when they bought the big centre-half.
Yeah, Van Dijk.
You know, they sort of looked at it and went, all right, if he's going to cost us the equivalent of two players, he'll be worth two players to us. And they buy him and, you know, they win the league and whatever with him and they win the team. That's what I call good recruitment. And Leicester City are the same. You know, they've had Mahrez there for next to nothing. The midfield player, I think, might be the best in the country, Kante, who's now at Chelsea. They got him for next to nothing and sold them on for big fees. They've now got the lad Tielemans coming along. And you go, that is recruitment. They have done, I mean, even Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
They bought for next to nothing and made big money on him. So I think they've got to look at the recruitment on one side. And then, I'm not a great fan of stats. I mean, stats to me are, do you win or don't you win? But
three of the four of us wrong.
But then I look at the stats, and you can't ignore it. I think United are one of the lowest in terms of, running ability.
Yeah, they are.
You might call it commitment and go,
yeah, you may.
When we lose the ball, is our first thought to recover it? You know, if you apply the Barcelona thing, you get me back in 5 seconds,
yeah,
that sort of thing. I don't see that. I don't see much of that at all in the United team. Mm. And, you know, there's a lot heaped on the back four then. They say, you know, the back four, the defence is still in. Fortunately for them, the goalkeeper's back to his best.
Yeah, yes.
Otherwise, that's
Ron, would you have brought Ronaldo back, or has he created as many problems as they hoped he might solve?
It's a hard one, that. You bring him back, first of all, forget the expense, because he's paid for himself. Whatever else he pays for himself, you know, with commercial things that go in. But I think it should be explained to him now whether he can take this on board, that his role would be more of a cameo role. I think Ronaldo would be better served at United in most games, particularly the big games, sitting on the bench, coming on when the games get stretched. I mean, I like Cavani. I mean, I know he's
had
injury,
yeah.
But I think he was an old-fashioned centre forward that had good movement in the box. And I think I'd like to see them use him alongside Greenwood, perhaps, up top. And then when the game gets stretched and open and the players are sort of starting to go a bit tight, then might be the time to put Ronaldo on. Because the one thing you know for sure, give him a chance and he'll take it.
Mm.
But, you know, I think City, when I saw City were in for him, I thought I could see that because they've got so many creative players that can set little things up for him. I'm not so sure, apart from Fernandes, who's, you know, for whatever reason, he's going through a spell which I can't fathom because he's carried United for the last 18 months.
Well, the answer, Ron, to that is that they're not getting as many penalties as they did. So that's why he's not having the same impact.
Well, yeah, but he's in terms of assists, in terms of people he played in terms of the goals he got, you know, you can always have a maverick in your team. And I think he was a great maverick for them. And all of a sudden, I think he's been caught up now in the general malaise.
Big man, how difficult is it to manage Manchester United?
Well, don't forget, when I went there, United were nothing like the United of latter years. Don't forget, we always, and you'll have known the same at Villa and at Wolves, you know, by and large, used to finish above them in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was at West Brom, I think we finished above them every year. So when I went there, I wasn't looking at maintaining something. I was looking at improving things.
Yeah.
And when I talked with the chairman, that was my first sort of thing. We've got to become a European club again. Because United, since they won the European Cup in 1968, I think it qualified for Europe, I think, only three times in the 11, 12 years, whatever, how many years it was. Now, at West Brom, at Villa, you always qualified for Europe. And that's what we said. We've got to become a European club again, which is what we did. We started finishing in positions or winning the cups that got us into those situations. Because United, you know, when you think of United, people used to say to me, we've not won the league for 15 years. And I would say, well, 3 years ago, you're in the second division. You know, how are you going to win it from there? Yeah.
That's a great
answer. You know, so we never came out of the top four. And we're also in an era, by the way, when virtually every team that won our league was the best team in Europe, because invariably in that spell, I think Villa had won the European Cup, Forest had won it a couple of times, Liverpool had won it about two or three times. You know, in a period of 5 or 6 years, the best teams then were all in England until... Obviously,
Heysel. Ron, let me ask you this. I was watching the documentary Busby the other night. Fantastic. I mean, what a man.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You, Wilf McGuinness, I mean, I refer these days disparagingly to Ollie as new Wilf McGuinness. It's hard when you're the chosen one of a legend. Frank O'Farrell struggled. Dave Sexton didn't get it right, although he wasn't Busby's pick. You came in and blew everybody away. With the shadow of Busby still there, do Manchester United now need a coach that doesn't call Fergie boss?
You know what? It's amazing you say that. Now, Ollie Solskjaer is probably one of the nicest blokes in the game, mm-hmm. although he wasn't the day he stuck four past us at nothing. But I would say, I used to read where he kept making references to the boss, And I think sometimes the players, you know, players love, if you give the players a chance to deflect, they will deflect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you say anything that gives them, oh, it's not us, it's that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think half of them are going around now, Man U, subconsciously thinking, the manager's fault, not ours. I mean, they've got to look at themselves as well. But do they? Invariably, the buck stops with Ollie, and he's got three or four very difficult games. But he seemed to pay, and it is hard because, you know, Fergie was his mentor. Mm-hmm. And Fergie was his, you know, he brought him into England and had great success with him. It would be hard, but to keep constantly calling him boss, you know, I know a lot of the players that I work with still call me that, amongst other things. But
yes. You know, that's right, boss.
Tony Cascarino, yeah.
Yeah, I know that story as well. That's one for another time.
Yeah.
But no, what I'm saying, you didn't go into Manchester United and call Samat boss. No. You went in there as an individual, very keen to stamp his own identity on that football club. And Ollie's just the latest in a number of picks.
Is that not something about that has to do with authority as well? You know, when you're a manager, you have to have authority in the dressing room over your players.
Yeah, and he hasn't got
it. He doesn't have that. No. So that's why my question to you as well, Ron, was, do you think players' accountability is key here as well? Because a manager can only do so much. And we all know Solskjaer is not the person that has the right authority like Alex Ferguson. So it has to come at the end of the day also from the players. Mm-hmm. So you being a former manager, Ron, do you think player accountability is key at the stage of Man United? Because some of the players, if you see them playing around and playing for the badge of Man United, it's just a shambles sometimes.
Well, have they got enough leaders in the camp? You know, I would look at them and think, have they got, who would get to, I mean, I was all for it, and I know it goes against the grain. I've been in dressing rooms where I've allowed players to have a stand-up fight, long enough to say, all right, that's finished now, get on with it. But because they care, you know, I've had great captains, people like, obviously, Brian Robson.
Yeah.
Brian Robson would come in, and sometimes if you were, if things weren't going well, before you got a chance to say anything, he'd be into one or two. You know, and that there's nothing wrong in that at all. I actually think you might be right there. I can imagine at Liverpool, I keep harking back to Liverpool, but I can imagine somebody, and he's not a regular in the team that much, if things aren't going well, I can imagine somebody like James Milner digging people out.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong in that at all. Nothing wrong. We used to encourage that because you used to say, but what happens in the dressing room stays in the dressing room. I know it's hard with social media today and things like that, but I think players should be more open with each other. And if somebody's not doing their stuff, they should dig them out.
Mm. Now, that's bullying in the workplace, right? That's bullying. You can't do that in the more than one back.
Can we say the game has gone soft?
The game's changed.
The game's gone soft.
No, I think. Hey, by the way, I think life has changed. Everybody's, you know, you can't be offensive like woke. This woke business, you know. And the other thing, Andy, this would drive me up the wall when somebody, if you're going to give somebody a volley, and they go, oh, you'll have to talk, or his agent rings you up and says, yeah, they got my player. And you know our response to your player. He's on contract to us.
Yeah, your player.
Ron, brilliant. Would you explain, please, to Nigel de Jong how good George Best was?
Right. I'll go through a group of players, say from 1960 or whatever. You go Pele.
Yeah.
You go. Di Stefano was a little bit before that, maybe, and Puskas maybe just past that. And then you, in the next group, you go Cruyff, Beckenbauer, and then Maradona, and then the two recent ones, you know, Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
There's not one of those better and George Best.
Thank you, big man. The prosecution rests its case.
That's a good.
It's an opinion.
And he played. Don't forget, he played. Sometimes, if you watch games from the '70s and the '80s, which I find quite interesting now, you know, we talk about. But you look at them and you see them, and the pitches in England were a disgrace. He had to play in mud heaps. And people and defenders were allowed to kick him all, but he could kick him back.
Oh, he would.
You know that, Andy. Yeah. He was a strong little son. He was, so, wasn't he? You know, he would shirk nothing. And he was, I mean, my favourite out of all that group, and Nigel Luck might appreciate that. If I had to nail one of them, I would probably go Cruyff, because I thought Cruyff had everything.
Thank you very much, Ron.
No,
that's his favourite out of the group.
Out of the group, no.
But he comes second to best.
I understand that. He's second to best. I understand. And what I said to Keezy as well, Ron, you know, we all have different opinions. Best, I understand.
But I have to tell you.
Yeah, I have the most respect for Best, and I told you that as well. It's just a matter of opinions, right? Mm. And which one you prefer, yes or no. Johan Cruyff for us as a Dutchman, it was the pinnacle of best player in the world. I got another question for you, Ron. Why is it that George Best, international wise, is not mentioned with the likes of Pelé?
Because he played for
Johan Cruyff. Because that is the one thing that I think is bothering most of
the. He played for Wales at his prime.
Let Ron answer.
Nigel, I'll give you, for instance, he played for Ireland when they had some decent players, but a lot of them weren't even playing in the top
league. They weren't.
And he played. Now, if George Best, picture the scene. Neeskens was a great player. Neeskens was a terrific player with Cruyff.
Yes.
Substitute Neeskens and put Best alongside Cruyff in that situation. And I'm telling you now, they would have won. They'd still be world champions.
I think you're right, big man. I think Bessie was, Alec, you think Bessie was that good that if you'd have swapped one of the Dutch players that with the team that went so close, Bessie would have made them world champions. I agree.
No, but I
tell you what, that Bertie Foulkes would still be in hospital.
Last one, Ron, sorry. Sir Bobby Charlton.
Yes.
What's your verdict on Bob?
Yeah. Wonderful player. Not one to go to a party with, but wonderful player.
This is a player point of
view. He was a dullard, but I know what you're saying. Yeah. As a footballer.
Oh, he's a great player. Great player. In fact, I've probably done him a disservice by not including him in that little group I've just said.
Mm. Right.
But the best, the most complete footballer I've ever seen, Andy.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of doubt, the best centre-half I ever saw was also one of the three best centre-forwards, Big John Charles. If you had to put everything into a computer and come out with the perfect footballer, you'd come out with John Charles.
Would you really? Wow.
Oh, aye, you'd come out with John Charles.
And such a lovely man.
6'3", could sprint, and you'd stick him up front when you were losing and get your hat-trick. I mean, they still call him the king in Turin today.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 100 years since he played them. But, you know, terrific. He was terrific. And there'd have been a lad when the Munich air crash probably could have gone on to be better than any player that's ever played would have been Duncan Edwards, who was 21. He'd played a load of times for England. He'd won everything at 21 and he got killed in the plane crash. So, but he would probably have gone on to be the best player of all time.
Boss, can I say
boss
to Mr. Atkins?
He likes boss.
Yes, he likes boss. Out of respect for what he accomplished in the world of football. Boss, so let me get this straight. Going back on the on your preferences as the best footballers in the world, Sir Bobby Charlton, do you put him in the same bracket as Johan Cruyff and George Best, or do you put him as a good third?
Well, that whole group, Nigel, that I said at the start, you know, it would be. I mean, if Pelé had played more in Europe, he might have been, without a shadow of doubt, easily the best. But because Pelé didn't come and do it at one of the big European clubs, you wonder. Mm. You wonder a little bit. You know, he was a great national player, phenomenal national player. Maradona, Maradona carried Argentina. He won a World Cup off his own bat in 86. He took Napoli to two titles that, you know, they'd never won a title in their life, and he carried them to that. So he had a short period where he was unbelievable. Bobby Charlton, you can talk of him in the same breath, maybe not quite at the same level, but it'd be marginal.
Okay, so bestie in your own cry, if you pick all day over Sir Bobby Charlton. With all due respect for Sir Bobby Charlton.
Oh, yeah, you would, I think.
Thank you very much, I rest my case. He's trying to dig me out.
I rest my case.
In the conversation we had last week, which got a little heated, I did mention Bobby Charlton as one of the greats and one of my early heroes.
No, you're saying greater than Johan Cruyff.
I said that was he may have had a bigger impact in that time.
No, don't come back from your words. I told you, you could fly to any... Sir Bobby Charlton was bigger than Johan Cruyff. So let me get that.
Ron, I had to turn for reinforcements because arguing with a Dutchman is really hard. Anyway.
thank you, boss, for clearing that up. I rest my case.
Ron Atkinson proving what some of us always knew is just a proper football man. And thank you so much, Ron, for spending time with us.
Fantastic.
And I hope that, actually, I can promise you we're going to do this again, if you're okay with that. In the meantime, Ron, thank you so much. It's been great to catch
up. Thanks, boss.
Thank you very much, boss. It's been an absolute delight talking to you.
By the way, Andy Gray will be well pleased to know I picked him as the best centre forward in Aston Villa.
Thank you, Philip. I always said you were a terrific judge of a footballer.
Yeah. I thought you mentioned Cass earlier. On. No, did he not get mentioned?
just one thing, Andy. Who did I pair you up with?
Did you pair me up with?
I know
Jerry Hitchens.
You've read the book.
No, I haven't. Is that right?
Yeah, Jerry Hitchens. Yeah,
Jerry Hitchens and Andy Gray.
Good knowledge.
There you go.
I thought Yorkie might have got a shout, but maybe he was too young at that time.
No, Yorkie was young.
Ron, again, thank you.
Thank you, big man. Okay, thank you very much.
Brilliant.
Top class.
Brilliant.
Hasta luego.
Speak soon, big man. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Ron's always just see you later. Top man. Love him. There's many things that we could continue to discuss about Big Ron, but probably better not. But just suffice it to say,
his knowledge of football is exceptional.
How old is he?
82, 83.
How
incredible.
How sharp is he? Yeah. Talking about football and get all these memories.
Jerry Hitchens.
I thought you might have gone Andy Lockhead.
No. When Ron's obviously played at Villa.
No, what was Lockhead?
He was a blunderbuss of a centre forward.
And you were messy, were you?
I had a little bit more subtlety, I think. Listen, if Big Ron pairs me with Jerry Hitchens as the two best front men at Villa, then I'll take that.
I probably couldn't argue.
But Jerry Hitchens, and when he said to me, who did I pair you up with? Well, I knew it wouldn't be the modern era because, you know, Ron's knowledge goes back further. And he would have watched Jerry Hitchens play, who was a terrific Aston Villa centre forward, or more like a 9.5.
I'm trying to think of those. He managed there, Dean Saunders. Sanders, as he always called him, Dean Sanders, he had, didn't he? Yorkie was a kid really playing wide, wasn't he, in those days?
Yeah.
But Georgie,
Big Cyril, we took Cyril to Villa.
Yeah, well, Coventry had really given up on Cyril at that point.
John Dublin.
Dublin was after me.
Top player.
He was top player.
Ron
turned that whole team round in about 3 months. I'll never forget when we first went into Villa that summer. And we sat down in the office before the first training session. We were in about 3 or 4 weeks before it. And he said to me, right, I'm going to give this lot a chance. You know, they've just got up, I think. So I'm going to give them a chance. We'll have a look at them for a month or so, 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, and we'll see how it goes from there. Mm-hmm. We took our first training session, went back in the office, and he went, fuck me. He said, forget that. He said, we'll need to get rid of six right away. and within 3 weeks, Nigel, we brought in five players.
Platy was one of those, but not one of the six.
He wasn't the one who was getting rid of. Platy had already agreed to join Barry.
5 million, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
5.5 million. Yeah. We couldn't stop that. If we could have stopped that and kept Platy, we would have done, of course. But another six had to go, and Ron got them in.
I could do this all day, every day. It's so much fun. Thank you, Nigel. It's great to have you back. We missed you last week, my friend. Really good fun. Get to us at Keys and Gray Pod on Insta and Twitter, and we will be back here next week at the same time. And once again, big man, if you found us, if he's 82 and found us on a podcast, good luck to him. Thank you, Ron.
And use Ron's words, hasta la vega.
And by the way, Johan Cruyff is the best player in the world.
Second to best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.